And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, Alabama. I'm talking about y'all. This show goes way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. By the way, don't forget that we are streaming. The show is at all times available to you, not just in the audio formats in which you are hearing it, but also live online, streaming video from inside the Right Side Studios. And where we are, right? So Butters, we're up on, you can stream it live through our website, rightsideradio.org. You can stream it at Twitter at Right Side Radio. You can stream it on YouTube and now stream it on
Rumble.
Yes. Yep, so, we got a few of you, and I'd say shout out to those of you that are watching us on those various platforms.
Whoop,
and
whoop.
If you got some comments, throw it in there. We're definitely keeping an eye on that.
Yeah, keeping an eye on not just the text lines here in the studio, but also the commentaries on the live feed.
And if you just can't listen live, head on over and download the podcast.
And there's a podcast, which is about to hit 200,000 downloads.
Yes.
By golly. All right. Hey, listen, this is that time when I resource a show and I think, that's pretty weighty. That's right here at home. Ooh, look what happened down there. Oh, that's in our listening area. And I find myself collecting up a whole batch of what we like to call home fries. Oh, yeah. Cooking them up. Smell them. Okay. So this is, there's several things happening. Number one, know this. You are just weeks away from the state not being safer. What I mean by that, tongue in cheek. What I mean by that is that the legislature goes into session. I can say that because I was one. I am a recovering state legislator myself, and we used to joke that the legislature being in session, the state is not safe. And then just the opposite when they adjourn. So here's something that's coming. Let's see, I'll grab this one first. Right now, there is some pretty serious inclination that the Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, who's been in studio here before, we need to get him back, but Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, seems to be inclining to the idea of Medicaid expansion. Why is that a big deal? I mean, are we just taking care of people? That's all it is, isn't it? I mean, we got people out there need stuff. It's more than that. I mean, right now, I want to say 24% of Alabamians are on some form of government assistance for medical care. That is not because we are a abjectly poor state. It's because, like many other states, we have just allowed the opportunity for entitlement programs to continue to grow. Now, I do not mind the idea of taking care of those who are greatly in need. What I do mind is when we continue to use taxpayer dollars to fund something that then, A, creates more entitlements, B, charges it to the taxpayers, and then C, also, by the way, just really hits the bottom line hard for our state finances. Medicaid right now, I see we have two budgets. If you're not familiar, we have two budgets. We're one of the only states in the world, in the nation at least, that has two budgets. One is all education, everything to do with education. Something in the neighborhood of $8.1 billion last year. Everything else it takes to run the state is in what's called the general fund budget. And that's where you have things like Medicaid, prisons, mental health, state troopers, the court system, all that is over there. So the general fund budget is like $2.2 billion. I got to go back and look and see what it was. But Medicaid consumes like 33% of that. It's massive. But Phil, if we expand it, all we're doing is helping people. No, you're spending a whole lot more money. And, oh, no, by the way, it's a tough nut to crack because we have, in Alabama, a balanced budget requirement. We're not allowed to go into deficit spending. Praise God for that. But all that to say, we can't afford this. Oh, but Phil, doesn't the federal government help with these dollars? Yeah, at first. So Medicaid, the way it works is the state has to spend X amount for the number of enrollees, and they draw down what's called a federal match. The federal match, and I don't recall the percentages, the federal match is what it is. The feds under Obamacare wanted all the states to grow their Medicaid plans. And they said, we'll pay for it. We'll pay for the increase for the first several years. After that, we pick up the ticket. Way back when I was in the legislature, it was going to be an extra $279 million a year that we'd have to find. And so we said no. We were one of the states that said, no, we're not doing this. Well, you know, since then, the new Republican order in the state house, which is a supermajority, by the way, has done things like passed gas taxes, defied the idea of having school choice. And granted, they've done some good things, but they've also done some things you look at and go, what are you guys doing? Well, there is no pressure for them to have to expand Medicaid unless they want to, because they are in the majority. Now, having said all that, Speaker of the House Nathaniel Ledbetter recently spoke at a breakfast panel hosted in Montgomery. He is quoted on Alabama Daily News just a couple weeks ago as saying, it is time to consider the impact to improve the state's quality of health care by floating the idea of expanding Medicaid with a privatized approach. What does that even mean, a privatized approach? Saying that the discussions on the idea among legislative leaders were ongoing. That's the first time I've heard that we're looking at the possibility of expanding Medicaid. And I would question why the Republicans would see this as being a good idea. He talks about how much more we'll bring down in the match to cover up the gap in the 2010 Affordable Care Act. That's Obamacare, by the way, allows this eligibility to grow. Well, yeah, but like I said, they don't pick it up forever, and then it's on us to maintain it. Because once you put it in place, brother, you ain't taking it away. So there's that. We'll talk with Stephanie Smith, top of the hour, from the Policy Institute about what she thinks on this one. Here's the other thing. Things they don't have to do unless they just want to. Expansion of casino gaming. I have talked about this ad nauseum. I will try not to refresh every single aspect of this, but here's the bottom line. They're using a straw man argument. Well, gambling's happening out there illegally, so we better just go ahead and legalize it so we can regulate it and tax it. I could say that about anything. I could say that about prostitution. I could say that about drug trafficking. I could say that about human trafficking. It's happening. Heck, why don't we just legalize it so we have to quit worrying about it and, you know, by golly, then we can just regulate it and, oh, by the way, tax it. So what they're talking about right now, exclusive on 1819 News today. Exclusive preview, House lawmakers are to introduce a gambling bill with lottery, sports betting, Class 3 casino gaming, all of it. They're like, we're going to be a gambling state, man. This is awesome. So according to officials who spoke to 1819 News, lawmakers plan to introduce a bill that will include Class 3 gaming, that's casinos, full-on casino gaming, a state lottery, sportsbook gaming, and the creation of an Alabama Gaming Commission. You know what they know? They know the people of Alabama wouldn't mind having a lottery. If they throw that in the bill, maybe that'll draw people to the polls and they'll get all of it. What they're also doing, by the way, is they're rewarding the people who have been breaking our laws for years. They are. Not just the ones running the little bingo hall in the back of, you know, Granny's kitchen. No. We're talking about the people that have been truly defying the law and corrupting our state politics with bribes and all kinds of other, you know, undue influences. The way this works, by the way, is it requires a constitutional amendment. Our Constitution as a state does not allow this. So they would have to pass something. In the interim, they'd have to also basically repeal 18 other constitutional amendments that have allowed some form of some gambling like a dog track or a bingo hall. And then they'd have to pass something that would allow it. And what are they going to do? Is it going to be free market? No, because they keep operating like non-Republicans. So it's going to be allowed in certain parts of the state. What? Yes. The Porch Creek Band of Indians will have it on their tribal lands. Birmingham, Macon County, Greene County, Lowndes County, Houston County, Mobile County, and an undetermined county in northeast Alabama. Oh, by the way, the Speaker of the House who really wants a casino happens to be from Jackson County. So what we're looking at here is what I would call a non-free market, non-Republican style bill that, oh, by the way, also legalizes casino gaming. And here's the thing, even if they can get this to pass, which I don't think they can in the legislature, It still has to be brought to a vote of the people because a constitutional amendment in Alabama requires a vote of the people to ratify it. So they can put all their political capital on the line and try to pass that bad boy and claim that all they're doing is really just trying to bring in more revenue. We just need more revenue. Just all right, revenue. All we're doing is bringing it, we're legalizing it so we can regulate it and tax it. What a stupid argument. But then at the same time, they will have to build government because they'll have to have a gaming commission then. And then they'll also technically be raising taxes because they'll be taxing it at unusual levels for themselves. Then they'll start taxing the winnings, and then they won't let you go in without taxing your entry. And I'm pretty sure what they're going to wind up doing is taxing your exit too. And then on top of that, you got issues with corruption and influences that we don't want, and we're rewarding bad guys. Good luck with that, fellas. That's what I'm saying. All right, listen, that's a bit of a rundown on some things coming up in your legislative session that starts in a few weeks. We'll see how that goes. Let's take a break right now. We'll come right back, and I'll tell you about some other stuff happening around the state that is just interesting. And then, coming up top of the hour, we on the line with Stephanie Smith from the Policy Institute, followed by Hannah Stevens, the UA sign girl. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower. All right, we're doing what we like to call cooking up a batch of home fries. Yes, indeed. Oh, smell it. So I'm trying to figure out which story I want to go with next. I'll tell you what, let me grab this one. All right, so here's one of the quirky things that our state government did at some point in the past, and now trying to unravel it is like, I don't know, dealing with the mafia. The Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, the ABC board. Have you ever noticed, like the you know, in old days we called them liquor stores. I'd run down to a liquor store, get me a bottle of Ripple. You know, get down to a liquor store, get some Fireball, whatever. How many of them are actually called ABC stores? Have you noticed that? ABC stores. You know what they are? State-owned liquor stores. That's what they are. Why are we in the business of competing with private industry? I'm not even commenting on the nature of what they're selling. I'm not going down that road at all. What I'm asking is, I don't care if it was a bread store. What if we had the ABC store was the Alabama Bread Control Board, and they were selling bread? Would it make sense to you for Alabama to be in the business of having state employees stocking shelves and running cash registers and paying leases on property to, oh, by the way, sell bread, which competes with the private sector? Why would we do that? Why are we doing this? It's a question that we could never get answered. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and let you in on one of the dirty little secrets out of Montgomery that I don't have anything more than just like the oh yeah kind of stories. No names, all right? But if you look at an ABC store, and they're in almost all communities, I can picture two or three around where we are right now. They are not on state property. They lease from people. Oh, really? Oh, yes. Big perpetual leases. Why is that important? Because in the old days, you couldn't ever get rid of ABC stores, and the sense was, oh, look, they're often owned by LLCs that may very well have former state legislators holding the leases and making money on state contracts. Wouldn't that be a hoot to prove? Don't have it in hand, but I can tell you it's awful. That being said, you still have to ask, why are we competing with the private industry? At the same time, our buddy Yaffe, who's up at WVNN in Huntsville and also writes articles for Yellowhammer News, he wrote a piece that came out yesterday. It says, don't just cancel the new ABC warehouse, end the ABC completely. He says the lease on the alcoholic beverage control facility in Montgomery is due to end in 2025. The board is looking for a new, bigger facility. The ABC board accepted proposals for a new warehouse. They're looking for just a gargantuan warehouse, by the way. And so this is going to be one more thing that we're going to do. And he makes the point that I just kind of made. He says, imagine if Governor Ivey announced tomorrow that Alabama would start opening new government-run grocery stores. And that we would now have a monopoly over all groceries sold. So even the privately owned alcohol sales stores have to go through the ABC board for their licensure and then compete with them. And then think about this. State employees with state benefits are stocking shelves. Why is that a thing for us? Why? Alabama is one of only 17 states that has a government monopoly over alcohol sales, Yaffe writes. I can understand why a Democrat-controlled state would want this kind of monopoly, but why the Yellowhammer state? We're solidly conservative. Can someone explain now having government-run liquor stores aligns with state government policies? What an awesome question, my friend, and I joined Senator Arthur Orr multiple times on bills to undo the ABC board that never went anywhere because you couldn't ever get enough buy-in. I can co-sponsor all day long, and if nobody's going to vote for it, there it sits. But yes, I was on that multiple times, and it always got resistance, and it always died in a quiet pile. There's that. What else have I got here real quick before we go to the break? Here's an unusual story. So I imagine this to be a new charter school, and I don't know much about it, but a story on Alabama Daily News came out yesterday that caught my attention. In Demopolis, Alabama. Y'all, Demopolis is a wonderful little town down, I believe, in Marengo County. And I had a friend of mine that grew up there. He said it was a great kind of town. It was the kind of town where you could dial a wrong number and talk for 10 minutes. Awesome. But in Demopolis, Alabama, they're proposing a brand new healthcare sciences high school. So it may be one of those new charter schools or a state-sponsored specialty school, but it will focus on healthcare sciences. And they just got a pledge for a $26.4 million pledge from Bloomberg Philanthropies in New York. Now I question, because Bloomberg is not known for being conservative, are they going to be teaching transgender access? I don't know. All I know is it's a $26.4 million pledge from Bloomberg. The money is, of course, contingent upon state support for the high school, which is envisioned as a tool to not only help produce more healthcare workers, but to train and place workers in Alabama's rural communities. It's an interesting concept. I have told you about all I know of it, but it is already out there with a massive pledge. And local legislators are like, whoop, whoop, this is all good. We'll keep our eyes on this and tell you where it goes. But in the meantime, I find this to be, and I'm for school choice, so if it's a charter school and it's an opportunity to grow something, that's cool. I also just can't help but wonder what's going to happen if we take $26 million in Bloomberg money. Where will it go?
Yeah, it seems like local legislators at all levels, love to tout and get all excited about a bunch of money coming in from grants and government and...
But does it have stringers?
Maybe look into it, guys.
Does it have stringers attached to it? I think that is worthy of a follow-up opera. Bloomberg Philanthropies, by the way, announced that it had launched a $250 million initiative to create new healthcare high schools across the country, pledging money to 10 communities, including Houston, New York City, and Philadelphia, and Demopolis, Alabama. Anyway, we'll see what happens. That's big doings, but at the same time, you look at it and go, but what are they going to, have attached to that money? What requirements to recognize certain lifestyles or things will they have? All right, coming back next, we're going to be on the line with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute, get her thoughts on several policy issues, some of which I've already touched on. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, even sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two already on this Friday afternoon. And Butters was just like getting me all fired up during the break, talking about legislators and things they do with so-called discretionary funds. I can feel my blood pressure going up.
Goosefaba.
All right, settling down now. Going to the phones, as a matter of fact. Our good friend Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. She's been around policy and government now at both, you know, state and federal for quite some time. President now of the Alabama Policy Institute. If you're not familiar, you can find them at alabamapolicy.org. I was proud to spend some time on staff there myself, and she's doing a great job. Stephanie Smith, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry I missed the off-air conversation about discretionary funds because I have a pet peeve about that. I know that surprises you, John. But here's my pet peeve. The people who take pictures of themselves, meaning the legislators, with the big checks like they're from, you know, Publishers Clearinghouse. I think there should be a requirement.
Were we hot miking during the break? Were we hot miking? That's what we were talking about.
Is that what you're doing?
Yes.
The big checks. I feel like there should be some sort of, and you know, I'm not top down. I'm very bottoms up and, you know, freedom oriented. But let's float a piece of legislation where you have to take at least five taxpayers with you with the big check. Because that is who is actually paying the money, not the legislators.
Listen, there are members of my delegation, and I won't name names, but there were members of my delegation who were notorious for using the big fake check and trying to be the big stuff, you know. And I used to go, and I would stand there and I'd watch it, and then I would always announce to their chagrin, I would say, I want to thank all of y'all for being here today, and I want to remind you guys that we had nothing to do with this money. These are your tax dollars coming home to you, and we're just proud of
Absolutely.
It. And the other legislators would just go, curses, he did it again. but anyway, well, you didn't call in for that. Let's talk about some other stuff. So the legislative session is going to be kicking off before we know it. I mean, it's next month, right?
It is. It's right around the corner.
Yeah.
It's a couple of weeks away.
So earlier in the show, I'm not sure if you got to hear it, but I had a bit of a rant about two things. Three things, if you want to throw in the fact that I'm trying to question why a Republican supermajority would do some of what it does. But the two things that I harped on were, we're really seeing Speaker Ledbetter right now, Speaker of the House Ledbetter, sort of intoning that Medicaid expansion is under consideration. And then secondly, mm-hmm. they're looking at bringing this, you know, giant omnibus gambling bill that is just a complete distortion of what Republicans stand for. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yeah. Well, and I'll start there in that there are also rumors that are flying that those two things are related.
I agree.
That is one of those things that you're like, okay, it's one thing to be obnoxious and stand up with a big check and balloons and act like you're working for Publishers Clearinghouse. It's another thing to actually horse trade taxpayer dollars for something that you want or possibly even something that you're benefiting from. And we're in real corruption zone at that point. But as far as the Medicaid expansion talk, it's one of those times when you're like, okay, words matter, right? And so the way you define things matter, words matter, and describing a Medicaid expansion as a public-private partnership is a fallacy from the beginning because the federal Yep. government will not send money to a private, any sort of private corporation for the purposes of Medicaid. So that's a falsehood from the beginning that it's being described that way. Now, I will say, I think that they're trying to model what they're talking about after the Arkansas Medicaid expansion. And the Arkansas Medicaid expansion actually occurred in 2013. So over 10 years ago, Arkansas threw in the towel.
Yeah.
And said, we're going to expand Medicaid. We're going to be part of the federal program. We're going to let the feds tell us what to do. And they've changed it several times since then. Of course, they rename it something else that sounds good every time. You know, Arkansas, it was Arkansas Works, and then it was Healthcare Independence Program, and then back to Arkansas Works, and then now it's Our Home or something like that. But basically, the concept is the same, which is throwing in the towel as a state and becoming part of the federal Medicaid apparatus.
Yep.
What's different about what they're talking about, supposedly, which I've not seen anything in writing, but what's different about what they're talking about here in Alabama is what they're now doing in Arkansas, which is creating a middleman. And so what happens is that the governor of the state, which it was Asa Hutchinson at the time in Arkansas, it was not Sarah Huckabee Sanders at the time when they expanded Medicaid. But the governor has broad authority to expand Medicaid, frankly, and the Medicaid commissioner does.
Oh, wow.
by virtue of her position.
Yeah.
They can basically just say they're doing it. The question becomes, will the legislature fund it? And so they have pretty, like I said, they have pretty broad discretion about how to apply for the waiver. There's lots of jargon here, but the gist of it is this. If Governor Ivey and her Medicaid commissioner decide that they want to expand Medicaid in this way, what will happen is that they'll make an agreement with the feds, and then they'll create a secondary agreement with, I'm hearing, Blue Cross Blue Shield, because they're kind of the monopoly medical organization,
right,
you know, in the state, to be the middleman. So what would happen is that people on the Medicaid rolls would actually shift to be Blue Cross customers. So now you see why Blue Cross is for it, because federal money being funneled to Blue Cross instead of it being, quote, Medicaid expansion. But it would really be Medicaid expansion. We would just be calling it something pretty. So it's lipstick on a pig.
Yep.
It's the exact same problems that we have with actual Medicaid expansion or full-fledged Medicaid expansion, but it's shaded a little differently to make it sound better to constituents.
And let me make it sound worse to constituents for a second. What you said several things, and I want to rephrase them just slightly. It is acquiescence to Obamacare, because that's where the Medicaid expansion push came from. So it's, first of all, it's a state, you said throwing in the towel, perfect description. It's a state throwing in the towel to acquiesce to the demands of Obamacare. And then on top of that, it's a ticket that actually gets more expensive a few years later, because the state has to pick up a bigger tab after getting totally addicted to the idea of the feds helping them expand the capabilities of Medicaid. Next thing you know, the federal match reduces, and we pick up a bigger ticket to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's right. And by signing on to the federal program, it restricts what we can do as a state. It restricts work requirements for for Medicaid benefits. That's something that Arkansas has gone back and forth in the courts about, which is they tried to assign work requirements for certain childless adults and people who, able-bodied adults who were not working. They tried to make basically the old, Newt Gingrich style work requirements, or at least be seeking a job requirement, and the federal court struck that down. Now, Sarah Sanders has tried that again, and it's working its way through the system to have a work requirement waiver, so that they can actually get people off the rolls and into the workforce. So, but that's in process right now. That remains to be seen. And here's the other thing, and you hit on it, but this is interesting, this comparison to Arkansas, because Alabama is trying to compare itself to Arkansas, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. Arkansas is paying $200 million a year as a state for this program.
That's
current. So not only would we pay $200 million or, whatever the number would be for Alabama in comparison to Arkansas, then that when that balloon payment comes due, from the federal government,
yeah,
it will explode.
Oh, yeah. It will explode. And then at the same time, and I'm glad of it, Alabama's required to have a balanced budget, which means we can't go into deficit spending, which means that we either, A, mm-hmm. borrow from the trust fund, or, B, they'll have to cut programs elsewhere to maintain the size of Medicaid, which is an awful set of parameters to work within. Hey, listen, I hate to do it. We're up against a break right now, and we didn't even touch on gambling. Are you able to stay on through the break and then come back and do a short segment on gambling?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Happy to.
Well, let's do it. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We're with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. Listen, you can go to their website, alabamapolicy.org. If you want to get in the weeds on some stuff and find out the deep details of things you wish you'd never known, but they are there, Alabama Policy Institute's got them for you in writing on their website. Check them out, alabamapolicy.org. We will be right back on Right Side Radio. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just saving the world one soundbite at a time. Going right now back to the phones with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. Stephanie, we're going to talk about gambling here, the majority of what I want to talk about with you for the last few minutes, but I got to ask you, first of all, do you know anything about Bloomberg pledging $26 million for a healthcare sciences high school in Demopolis, Alabama? Have you heard that story?
I have heard that story. That was one of the things that Governor Ivey put in her potential budget last legislative session, that the pause button was pressed because of the sheer kind of strangeness and dollar figure assigned to that idea by the powers that be on the budgetary side of the legislature. And I think that there was a task force that was assigned to kind of study whether or not that was a viable project. And in the meantime, that crew has gotten some New York City money.
Yeah.
New York City Pace. What is it? The Pace. We show you how old we are.
It's Bloomberg.
Salsa.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Bloomberg money is now, going to be the reason why it should be in Demopolis, and it should be fully funded by the legislature because they have this money, and of course, this money can't be accessed unless the legislature, fronts the money.
Bloomberg is not known for conservative policy, and I just cannot help but wonder if we are looking at something that comes with a lot of stringers.
It's like when Bill Gates decided he wanted to be involved in education and was going state to state and shopping around some funds, and you're like, I'm not sure what we're agreeing to here, but it's probably nothing good.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, speaking of nothing good, let's talk about the potential for gambling. And let me ask you, what insights do you have on whether or not these omnibus gambling bills have the ability to even pass both the House and or the Senate? What are your thoughts on that, first of all?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure being put on House members right now to act on gambling. The Senate passed last quadrennium, not the current Senate that is there now, passed one of these bills that Greg Allbritton was carrying at the time. And it was a different set of folks there. The Senate did pass it, and then the House sat on it. And then now the last couple of years, things have kind of just rocked along. And now the House is getting a lot of pressure to act first, and then send some sort of bill for the Senate to consider. But what's not being discussed very much, or often enough, in my opinion, is the fact that you know, the roster has changed in the Senate. And when the roster changes, the votes change. You know, that's representative, you know, that's representative government. And so I don't think that there's anything, and I haven't seen a draft, not unlike the House members and senators, who I understand have also not seen a draft. So apparently it's been leaked to some members of the media, which should tick people off, frankly. If I were a representative and I was being pressured to vote for a bill that some people in the media had seen that I had not seen, that would not be, you know, that would not be endearing to me. That I knew less about it than the Alabama political reporter did. That would not make me happy as a representative, but that maybe that's why I'm not a representative. So anyway, the bill supposedly makes some changes, increases enforceability, and has what they're calling a bidding process, which you and I know would have to be some sort of rigged bidding process in order for the current illegal operators to actually let that bill pass.
But we're watching that play out so poorly right now with the marijuana commission. I mean, the idea of, of you know, bidding or competing for limited licensure, and not that I even want this stuff, but they went totally anti-free market on the manner in which they intend to apply this.
Yeah, no question. And the it seems like a negative double whammy, the governance piece of this, or a triple whammy, really, because they're creating what they're calling a gaming commission. So you're increasing bureaucracy.
Yep.
You're putting unelected officials in charge of major decisions in the state. And it's a corruptible process. And we've seen that play out in this marijuana situation. And then here's the other piece that I think that maybe, I'm giving benefit of the doubt, maybe they were well-intended about, which is they're trying to say, okay, if the constitutional amendment passes, the statewide constitutional amendment passes, then the counties that were chosen to have these would have the ability to opt in or hold their own vote. And it's counties, but then it's city of Birmingham. And so if you live in or around the city of Birmingham, I would be willing to bet that the city council in the city of Birmingham would approve gambling in about 5 seconds flat.
Oh, yeah.
And so all of a sudden, this is your business. So there are a lot of constituencies that are getting stirred up into this by the way that they're trying to fix it. I think they've just made a little bit more of a mess of it.
They've added layers of pain into something that was already going to be painful no matter what they did. And it is to the point of watching the legislature go into self-flagellation mode, trying to create something out of nothing. It's just ridiculous.
Well, just the idea that legalizing something is going to curtail it.
Yeah.
Is not logical.
Nope.
I can't even get past that first argument.
That argument right there falls short when you consider you could say that about drugs, prostitution, human trafficking. It's out there. It's illegal. We should regulate it so we can tax it. Well, Stephanie Smith, as always, I appreciate your insights. You bring a lot to the table on these discussions. If you want folks to find out more about what you got going on, tell them where they can find you.
You can find us at alabamapolicy.org.
All right. And you yourself are on Twitter as well as Alabama Policy, am I correct, and other social media?
Yes, absolutely. We're on all the social media outlets, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it these days. But we have our guides to the issues and our blueprint for Alabama out on our website, so you can read about all these issues to your heart's content.
All right. Thanks, Steph. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Stay tuned. We're going to switch gears and get off of policy and start talking sports for a minute because it impacts right here in Alabama. I'm curious to hear what Hannah Stevens, the UA sign girl, has to say about the portal at Alabama. Oh, my. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.